Welcome back to Calvary Life. This is the podcast for the membership of Calvary Baptist Church and anybody else that is interested in local church life. We're glad to be back. I'm Charles Uptain.
Hey, I'm Paul Thompson.
And today we want to have a conversation that really comes off my mission trip. I just got back from Guatemala last weekend and had a great time down there working with our partner church. And one of the things that our missionary does down there, Paul, is he really, uses the nine marks of a healthy church, which is by Mark Dever, to really assess how the church is doing down there as he tries to train the elders and tries to lead in different ways and see how they're doing. I mean, it's really an assessment tool. And so as I was down there, I got to thinking, you know, it'd probably be helpful for us to have a conversation just to think about Calvary in that same mindset of the nine marks of a healthy church. I remember when the church was going through the elder process or the process of thinking about going to the polity of elders. With that, that was one of the books or one of the main books that the deacons went through. So I know it means a lot to you and a lot to the church leadership to think about those nine marks. So let's just have a conversation about them and just take them one by one and get your feel and mine as it comes to the nine marks of Calvary, how we're doing with the nine marks of a church.
I was thinking about one of the early sermon series I did. This is probably like 11 years ago, and I'm sure in the sermon series here, I did this on a Sunday night. I'm sure I credited Mark Dever and the folks at Capitol Hill Baptist Church for that content, nine marks, but I think I called ours like nine characteristics of a healthy church or something like that. I have to go back and look up that series. But we covered these things week by week in a sermon. Of course, you know, I shared with folks early on when I was coming to Calvary that how influential this was for me, this sort of framework that's not trendy. The desire of it is to be biblical, really, primarily. That's the focal point. Do we have a church that looks like the way the Bible describes a church? But also orthodox, traditional, something that would be recognized not just in 2024, but would have been recognized in 1724.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of thing. And so trying to just be timeless and healthy with this. And again, these big picture criteria, we have been using them. So I think it's a great grid. And if you're not familiar with the nine marks, maybe just this brief conversation we're going to have today will help you familiarize yourself with them a little bit more. And I'll mention, too, when you leave the services, if you're a Calvary person, when you leave our services on Sunday morning, you can pick up a lot of good information about these marks back at our Next Steps table. And we've got pamphlets and resources, and any of our staff there could point you to some good things to read and consider. And if you're not from Calvary and this is not familiar to you at all, then you can certainly find all this information and more, so much good, helpful material on the Nine Marks website. And so, you know, I would point you there. We're not originators by any means of this. We try to take some of those basic principles and in our context with our people and with what God's called us to do here, try to apply a good, you know, good, healthy biblical framework. So I hope that's been enough to hook you. Now you'll listen to the rest as we talk about each of these.
Yeah, so I'm going to use the list that's in the 2021 edition. There's a few editions that Mark has done and updated, and so as in Mark Dever has done. We don't want to get confused between Mark and Marks, but the nine marks that he lists in his book that's put out in 2021, which is the nine marks of the healthy church. And so this is the fourth edition, and so I'm going to use that list. So the first one on there, Paul, is expositional preaching. And I know this one kind of falls to you a lot because you are our main teaching, preaching pastor. So how would you say that we as a church are doing that? I guess evaluate yourself on that of expositional preaching.
Yeah, let me think of it this way. I think, one, I would score as high in this area, but not because I'm saying I score highly as a preacher. I'm not really evaluating my own preaching. But I would say we score highly in this for a few reasons. One, I think we've built a culture now, and Charles, you could weigh in on this, see what your thoughts are, because you've been here longer than I have, twice as long. I think we've built a culture now of listening, that this is the sort of preaching that our people expect.
Yeah,
doesn't mean that we wouldn't take a break. We're not slaves to any system, and we're not legalists with it, and doesn't mean that we won't periodically take a period of time where we're preaching on a subject-specific, topical kind of message. But even in a topical series, like I'm working on something right now for Sunday nights, but even that topical series is really just going to be a very focused expositional series. It's not just going to be, you know, a lot of thoughts and ideas and just a smattering of verses pulled from here and there. It's going to be from a primary text that we're going to just dive into specifically for this theme. But I think, you know, that's that's what our people expect now.
Right.
I think people would be a little disappointed if it's not that. Now, maybe every now and then something different, a guest speaker, that sort of thing doesn't throw us all off our game, but that's our listening expectation. And I think also from our teaching side of things, that's our teaching expectation. So it's not just me. If it's going to be any staff person, any elder that's going to be preaching a sermon, it's going to be of that sort. Now, we have different flavors, you know, we've got different personalities and different styles and that sort of thing. But this is a commitment for us. And, you know, we've talked about this. I'll try to make each of these short, Charles, so we don't have a 2.5 hour podcast on the nine marks. But, you know, we've talked about this as not just a personal preference, but a conviction that this is the way God's people grow the best, by hearing God's word taught and explained systematically, verse by verse, section by section, passage by passage, typically through whole books, sometimes through sections of books, but typically through whole books. You know, one of the first things I heard early on in preaching at Calvary was as we were going through verse by verse through certain books of the Bible, not obscure books. You know, I wasn't like pulling the most unpreached books I could think of, like verse by verse through Leviticus for right. 3 years. I mean, through prominent books, Ephesians or Romans, is comment, well, I've never heard that before. Not, I never heard your commentary on it before, but I've never heard that preached on before, that passage, that text. And it just shows the need to hear the whole counsel of God. And I think the best way to do that is through expository preaching. So on that one, I would rate us pretty well. People want that, expect that. They're hungry for that. And they know where we're going. I had a conversation with one of our senior adult ladies Sunday morning, appreciating the fact that she knew what the message was going to be about next week.
Yeah.
She knows where, you know, she knows where we are. She knows where it's headed. She can look right there and see what the verses are going to be. And people can study. They can pray ahead of time. They can be prepared. So I think we're doing pretty well on that one. Obviously, with quality of preaching, we can always improve. Everybody can improve. Yeah.
Well, I would agree. You know, like you said, been here for a while, twice as long as you. But, you know, the expositional preaching, I think, is, in my opinion, is one of the best things that has ever happened to Calvary. I think it's the reason that Calvary is what Calvary is today. And so I appreciate your want to stick to that and do that because you think it's right, and I think it's good for us in that. So let's move on to number two. Mark number two in this version is gospel doctrine, which I take it to mean that the gospel is the center, and that's kind of what we preach and teach and talk about, and it drives our work. It drives everything we do from a service. And so how would you say Calvary is doing when it comes to gospel doctrine?
I think that's an area that we're ascending. I don't think we're there yet, but I think people are hungrier and hungrier for that. I think where this shows up best is like, say, in one of our open classes where we're teaching biblical theology, but it's not just in those classes. So for the percentage of people, small percentage that may have taken that class, biblical theology, it's the content of biblical theology that's being expressed kind of continuously across whatever, small groups and D groups and Sunday morning messages, where people are seeing what the Bible really is about. That when we talk about the gospel doctrine, we're not just talking about Jesus died on the cross and rose again, although that's the pinnacle of gospel doctrine. Mm-hmm. We're talking about what's the story of Scripture? What's the storyline from creation to restoration, from Genesis to Revelation? And I think we've done a really good job, one, of just being aware of that story, but we're growing in that one. I think we're getting better and better at that, but we're just starting to integrate that in everywhere so people see these are not disconnected parts. I guess that's what I'm saying. I want people to see that all of these parts necessarily connect, and you don't understand any of them well. Some of them you may not understand at all if you pull them apart.
Yeah.
So from creation to the fall to the promises of God and the covenants and the redemption of Christ and the growth of the church and then return and judgment and new creation, new heavens and new earth, I think we're doing well. So I would say we're on the uptick on that one. I don't know what I would score it on like a 1 to 10 scale, but that one's trending upward for us.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny. I really think the children led in this one because of the Gospel Project curriculum. You know, we've done Gospel Project curriculum for, oh, I don't know, maybe 10 years now, something like that. And that was the first time that I remember at Calvary the focus of us looking at Scripture as a whole and seeing the whole picture of God's story from, like you said, creation through the redemption story to the second coming and how it all fit together and how that curriculum, even you still today, how it constantly brings you back to where's Jesus in this and yeah. where can we see that? So I think the Lifeway did good there, I think, in changing that curriculum.
That was one of their wins.
Yes,
I agree. And I will say this, no jab at Lifeway. It's better at the kids' level than the adult level probably, but in the material. But yeah, that basic premise. And I think people are seeing that. And what it does is it makes them see the gospel better, yeah. bigger. That this is not just an isolated story in the middle of Scripture, disconnected from the rest. That when you're talking about Adam and Eve, you're talking about the gospel. When you're talking about Noah or Abraham or Moses or David, you're talking about the gospel all the way through.
All right, so Mark number 3 is written this way. It's a biblical understanding of conversion and evangelism. So you take that for however you want to, but a biblical understanding of conversion and in evangelism.
I'm going to give us mixed on this one. One, I think, and again, just if anything I say today, if you guys are listening, say, man, that guy sounds pretty proud of himself. That's really not my intent. I'm trying to evaluate the whole church and not just my part in it. I think as we've grown theologically, in a sense that, you know, I think we're in a good spot there. I think, you know, people are interested in doctrine and truth and studying the Bible and not just, you know, self-help stuff, not therapeutic kind of stuff, but really, who is the God of the Bible? What does the Bible really teach? That sort of thing. I think our doctrine has grown. I think a right understanding of conversion, I think we're growing in that. I think we have a ways to go there. We're addressing that need in one way. One of the remedies we're giving to that need is, like, right now we're doing open class on soteriology, doctrine of salvation, and helping people understand really the fullness of it, the complexity of it, which is all about conversion. When we ask the question, what must I do to be saved, we can find the answer pretty simply, believe the gospel. But what does that entail? What is God doing in that? And, again, trying to give a short answer to what could be a really long discussion— helping our people understand that this is more than asking Jesus into your heart. Mm-hmm. This is more than praying a prayer, raising a hand, repeat after me, that sort of thing. Conversion is supernatural. We need to understand all the supernatural implications of it that result in the praise of God's glory. And so I think on the theoretical, theological side, we're doing pretty good. On the evangelism side, I think that's where the application of it, we're a little short on. You know, there's always this ongoing debate between people's perceptions of what they think Arminianism is or Calvinism is, and, you know, all points in between. What sometimes gets lost in the shuffle, I think, in those discussions, is that we're commanded by God to give the gospel. What we might believe differently from one another about how God is working in that and how God accomplishes his purposes through the gospel and who God saves and how God saves them, those differences can be real in our understanding, but our application is really pretty universal. And so I guess my answer to your question is, I wish we were doing better in terms of active evangelism, you know, trusting that, believe that God is sovereign. And, you know, I'll be teaching on what I believe the Bible teaches us regarding election, for instance, when we get to that section in soteriology. But our focus here is really more Romans chapter 10 than Romans chapter 8 and 9, and that's the reality of knowing people won't hear the gospel unless we tell them, and we have to be telling. And no one gets saved apart from the gospel. And so, anyway, I think our understanding of that theoretically is good. I'd like to see it hit the ground better.
Yeah. What do you think are some of the reasons that it doesn't hit the ground as well? Because I think we have people who believe that. I think we know that it's our job to share the gospel, to be the voice of the gospel. But it seems to I feel like maybe we aren't as bold as we need to be. I mean, what would you say to that?
I think some of it is stuff we would probably imagine it to be like that. We're nervous, we're anxious, we don't want to offend. You know, we do culturally, we are kind of bent towards politeness and not being offensive. I think also we have a misperception about the spiritual climate around us. You know, I think frankly more people are saved than they are. I led off an intro to the last open class with a recent article and study by Tom Rainer in his Church Answer series, where he termed the phrase crinos, you know, we're familiar with the term Rhino, Republican in name only. He said Christians in name only. And his estimate was, based on research and data he'd accumulated, an aggregate study was about 60% of the U.S. population at large that claims to be Christian is probably not. Not by any biblical standard or definition, 60% crying out, and 40% in your churches are. Now, maybe we're better than that. But I mean, imagine if even half that's true. Imagine if 20% of the people who attend are Christian in name only. Well, we've got to give the gospel here first. But I think there are a lot of factors. I think we think most of our people out there, what I hear people saying a lot is, everybody I know is a Christian. And that may be true, because if you've been a Christian a long time, then your whole circle probably is Christian.
Yeah.
But if you're in the public workforce somewhere, that can't be true.
Right.
You know, if you're a student, that can't be true. If you're out there coaching a team or volunteering in the community, that can't be true. So, and I think part of it too, Charles, I'm not just blaming our folks on that. I think a huge burden on that falls on us too, to model that and talk about it. And so if there's anything we haven't done well, if there's one thing among others we haven't done well, is probably talk about that more. And our own conversations with people. And that's something I could certainly be doing better is one, having more conversations, but when I do, just talking about them. You know, I don't want to brag about them or that sort of thing, but I need to be able to say, hey, I was talking to so-and-so the other day, and here's how the conversation went, and here's how we got around to talking about Jesus. Yeah. And that's the other thing, and that's probably a whole nother discussion. We have to make sure that in our evangelism, we actually are getting around to talking about Jesus.
Yeah.
And what it means to be a Christian and asking people to respond to that, not just, you know, we talk in Christianisms.
Yeah,
it's a lot easier to say, like even today, Randy and I were making a visit to the hospital, and we're talking with a lady in the elevator and talking about her husband and everything, and it was a short conversation, but we left it with, well, we'll pray for you and your husband. What's his name? Now, maybe that's helpful for sure, but I don't know if she's Christian, and that's not a gospel conversation. It's a pre-gospel conversation maybe, but I probably won't see her again.
Right.
So, you know, we've got to get around. We got to get the conversation to the gospel. Yeah. So in that one, I think we're doing good theoretically, theologically. I think our understandings are getting better and better and sharper and sharper. Our practice has to match it. We got to get out there with gospel conversations.
Yeah, sounds good. Okay, number four, Mark, number four, a biblical understanding of church membership.
This is a contentious one, Charles, but I would say of all the nine marks, this might be one where we've made the most progress.
Mm-hmm.
Overall, I mean, we talk about it a lot. Now, I know some of our folks still don't get it. They don't get why we would remove somebody from membership. They don't understand why we'd remove someone's cousin or grandson or neighbor or that sort of thing from church membership. And I know we've got a ways to go on this one, so I'm not going to certainly wouldn't score us a 10 on this. But you know, we've gone to some considerable effort, and we've been pretty consistent with talking about what church membership is. You know, I think our membership process is fairly robust now, from the classes that we require people to do, the interviews that we do and follow up, the conversations that we have. The real challenge here is really not for the new people coming in for the last 5-6 years. It's probably for the people who have been here a long time.
Yeah.
And helping them understand that church membership is not just some sort of privilege, like, you know, your Sam's Club card in case you ever need it. It's a covenant community that you're committed to, and we reflect the body of Christ to the world. We give a collective gospel witness based on the membership of the church. So that's a good one for us to explore sometime more, why we do what we do and how we do it. But I think that's one that we're doing pretty well on. I think we've been pretty clear and pretty consistent on. We can get better, but I think that's one that we're fairly sharp on. The challenge for us, Charles, you know, as an elder sometimes is in the conversations we have with folks that we're trying to bring back into the flock.
Right. Yeah, I was just thinking, you know, I don't know the exact number, but say there's 400 or 500 church members here on a Sunday morning. It used to be three times that weren't here, you know, when we started this membership process, when we had over 2,000 members on roll, and we're basically about the same size. And so I think when you look at that and you're saying, man, there's something wrong with this picture when that's our membership. So now we're down to, you know, I think we're right around 900 actual members. And thankfully, you know, when we make our phone calls every other week for prayer, most of the people that we talk to, we know who they are and we can find them and those kind of things. So I think we're making progress a long way towards a healthy church membership that means something versus just names that, you know, have been there forever, so to speak.
And that's a long, slow process. I'm going to throw this in real quick. If anybody's listening, maybe some other pastors and things, and you know, you read, maybe you picked up a copy of Nine Marks of a Healthy Church and you want a legitimate membership, this is one that I would encourage you just to work slowly and take your time and teach and encourage through it, because you can make a lot of mistakes, cause a lot of problems by rushing through this one. This is not something you need to make happen tomorrow. You know, we've got folks that we've been trying to contact and draw back for a couple of years now, and they're people that, you know, we're trying to be loving and biblical and patient and all those things, and praying for wisdom in those. So, you know, take it slow. Just slowly work that, and teach the congregation too, because you're in teaching healthy membership, you're actually unteaching what used to be. And so that takes some time. But I think we're doing that. Again, I give us pretty good marks on that one. That one's one that we've been doing pretty well and are getting better at.
Right, and I think that leads us to the next one, to be able to do the next one well, which is biblical church discipline. So, because without a healthy church membership process, church discipline is almost impossible. But how would you say that we are doing when it comes to church discipline as a church?
Maybe I'm going to sound overly optimistic today. I think we're doing better at that one. That's one that's trending upward, but we're novices at that. But I think the first stage of church discipline is just what you said. It is a healthy, legitimate membership. So in a sense, church discipline at its beginning is probably taking inactive people off roles. When you've made every effort that you think is reasonable, feasible, you've been consistent and patient and all those things and trying to reach out to people, and they show no interest in regathering with the body, no interest in participating, et cetera, then that first act of loving discipline is to remove them. You're not part of us. You show no desire to be part of us, and there are many reasons why. And there's some good articles that you can even find from Nine Marks about why to remove longstanding and active members, but that's the first stage. But I think the reason I say it's trending upward, though we're novices, is at least our people understand now that this is a biblical necessity to be healthy, that you can't just tolerate all sorts of sin. I think we're novices at it because, really, frankly, there are probably more situations that should have required church discipline than we've engaged ourselves in.
Yeah.
Sometimes they're very gray and they're very murky. I think over time, as we continue to pursue this biblically, patiently, lovingly, we're going to see maybe some more. We have had some dealings with church discipline, some situations, some very challenging. I think we'll probably see some more, but I think the result will be a healthier church. So I put us in the category of we're not great at that. We've begun that with earnestness. We're trying to get to a point of consistency in our practice of it, but it's no longer something that we ignore. And I think for a lot of churches, again, no judgment here intended, but I think a lot of churches just don't do it at all, ignore it. And you're inviting conflict, discord, spiritual disease, which is unhealth. You're inviting all those things by not dealing appropriately with sin and discipline issues. So that's a tough one.
Yeah, but speak to that for a second, Paul, before we move on, about even what we discussed today a little bit, about how, yes, the church discipline is done by the church, but there are steps along the way. And you were even mentioned one today about how our life groups kind of are maybe I wouldn't know if they're the front line of defense, but they are definitely early on in the situation if they're being a true small group to one another, with trying to hold each other accountable and knowing what's going on in the lives of each other, and hopefully to keep it, you know, from getting to the point where it is something that has to be brought to the church.
Yeah, the last thing we want to be perceived or realized is like a show, you know, a program that you just come to, a product that you receive that we offer to you. You know, you just show up on Sunday morning and evaluate, critique, receive, whatever. Here's what we do. Here's what the church is. It's this Sunday morning thing that I go to instead of who I really am, my family, my people. And so with that in mind, ideally, the first line, I think it is the first line of defense for the health of our church, our own self-defense mechanism as a church really is our people, that we're caring for one another. And in our setting, that should happen in small groups. But that means a small group's got to be small enough that people really know each other. And there's got to be enough transparency and accountability in it. They're actually sharing their life with one another. And enough care for each other that people are pursuing each other. You know, because practically speaking, good, bad, or indifferent, by the time a lot of situations, people's situations come to us, it's so far gone that it's hard to recover from, you know? where I think if we did a better job of pastoring each other, and I'm not saying that doesn't mean that we don't have pastoral responsibilities, but caring for one another, who's not here, how are they doing, where do I sense that they're struggling? So you can't underestimate the value of people being in discipling groups and healthy small groups and things for the care of each other. And the better we do at caring for each other on that frontline level, initial level, then the less crisis kind of level care we'll have to give, I think.
Yeah, because most sin, you know, it's something that we hide because it's a shame issue. And because of that, if you don't have people that are close to you, you know, you're not going to be able to sit out there from the stage and look at what's going on in 500 people's lives.
Yeah.
You got to have people that are closer to that have the that are open and are vulnerable to them so that we can have a better accountability structure.
And you say, well, how would I know what's going on with somebody? Well, wasn't it Dever who said, and he qualified what he meant by it, wasn't Dever who said church attendance or the lack thereof is the mother of all sins?
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's the cause of all sins, you know, but it seems to be the indicator of all other type of sins. So the first condition we look at, the first symptom that we see typically is that person hasn't been here in a few weeks or a little longer. And so if we could care for each other better on that end, and you know that to be true, Charles, you know who wouldn't be there in your D group for a few weeks quickly. You know it in a week or 2 weeks. In your small group, you know it the same few weeks. But if I'm preaching on a Sunday morning, it might be 2 months where I say, you know what, I haven't seen so-and-so in a while.
Yeah.
And that's just the nature of looking, like you said, across the room, and there's 500 people there. And unless you sit in the same seat every week, I may or may not see you.
Yeah.
So,
but there's some of that that's church-wide as well, because I would know the person that sits behind me every week, because we are all creatures of habit.
That's right.
You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be your small group or life group that is noticing your way and just you're not there. You know, if you're sitting in church and the person that you pass the offering plate to every week is not there for three straight weeks, you know, hopefully as a church member, we care enough about each other to say, you know, where is that person? And reach out, and that can be a huge, huge win for the church if we would do that for each other.
And that's really kind of part of that healthy church membership, too, that I hope we're growing in, that people understand who their people are. You know, if you're listening to this, who are your people? Your people are the church. It's the whole church you're a part of. That's your body. That's your community. It's not just your small group. So, yeah, that's a great point.
Well, we got four more, but I'm going to wait. I'm gonna cut this and say we're going to do a part one and part two. Is that okay with you, Justin? And so we'll do a part one and part two and pick up the discussion. There's some good rest of the marks, and I don't want to hurry through them today. So we'll kind of cut it here. But remember, if you have any kind of questions or things, comments you want us to banter around, have a discussion about, send it to podcast@calvarydothan.com. And we'll see you next time at the next time we get together and do part two of the nine marks of a healthy church. And remember, we are for God, for Dothan, and for the world.